Okay, here we are.
So it's so good.
With episode 10 of Being Human, Dog Eat Dog.
Dog Eat Dog.
Sam Huntington.
Mark Pellegrino.
And Megan Rath.
So this is kind of an interesting episode. Dogs are eating dogs.
Yeah, yeah. And there's other dogs watching. It gets really uncomfortable.
They get hungry.
Yeah. It gets bizarre and sexual.
So weird.
So weird.
So weird. What's also weird is seeing Sarah with that red hair.
Well, she's still got it now, but it's like blonder.
Blonde.
Yeah,
she's getting back to her natural blonde.
Yeah. So if you all will remember back to episode 7, way back when...
Vince
was waiting with the large hanging prosciuttos in the bar
to communicate. Yes, delicious.
Yeah, delicious huge prosciuttos.
Mark, I love this. Is to me, this seems like Bishop's version of just dread.
Oh yeah. As we're gonna find out, we know
exactly
what the entrance of the Dutch means.
Yes.
Cool.
Just
horses.
Absolutely not. There's some stuff going on out there.
It's Bumblebee.
This happens every time that we do this.
Yeah, it's a garbage truck out there.
I guess that makes sense. Let's do it on a Monday. But yeah, I love your silent performance here. Just not looking forward to what's about to happen.
And thinking about my options.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to figure out what you're going to do, what the move is.
Now, I thoroughly enjoyed these scenes.
Yep.
Giving you back all the crap that you gave me over the whole season.
Now, hold on a minute. I think I've been the passive recipient of rather caring and understanding.
That's a good point. I've actually given you plenty of crap.
And
the other version of this character.
You have, just by resisting me. And here you're just bitch slapping.
Yeah,
I remember
such a jerk.
I remember Mark taking me aside during shooting this and saying, "When I get back to playing regular Bishop, I'm going to kick your ass." But it's funny because
I'm the indulgent father on the one hand, and
yes,
I'm the kid, and you're the abusive dad.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's like I can't catch a break.
No, literally.
Yeah. There's.
This is my favorite version of you guys, I think.
Is it really?
Yeah, well, there's one coming up that I really, really like, too, from last week's episode, which is now...
Right.
Was episode 12?
Yeah,
I really, really like
the 70s.
Yeah, version. 70s, but this is this stuff in this episode is so well done.
Yeah. Well, and Mark and I, as I remember it, Mark, we had some discussions about, like, you know, that every time we see these guys in a different time period, they should move and talk a little bit differently than they. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's you've talked about that, and said they adopt the era that they're in, right?
Yeah.
They kind of,
you know, something that we missed though was when we were talking over the coffin, and there's subtle hints that they can hear us and we'll wake them up if we're not careful.
Well, that was
and talk kind of.
That was a funny thing is it's written sometimes. Okay, it's written that we're keeping our voice down so that Carlo, your maker, the guy behind the desk, does not hear us. So we had to remind the director and everyone, like, guess what? We can hear everything.
Not only can we hear everything because we're hypersensitive, but
yeah,
Carlo knows anyway.
Right.
The reason the Dutch are there is because
exactly
Carlo's being indulgent.
So we actually played the whole keeping the voice on thing so we wouldn't wake the Dutch,
yes,
which is a thing that shows up later in the later scene where the Dutch get woken by various things. This
right
scene was very difficult. You remember this?
Yes, I do.
Because they combined two scenes. There's one scene where we're dealing with the death of Bernie, and Rebecca is very upset. And then there was another scene where I explained to her what the Dutch is, and she's lucid.
Oh, yeah.
And they slammed the two scenes together, and we had a real hard time wrapping our brain around how do you switch gears from this.
Were they originally two different scenes?
I thought it wasn't two different scenes, but what I thought
it was
that I had to come in and make certain explanations. It seemed a little bit clunky.
Well, that was when they...
Better coming out of your mouth.
After they... Yes, exactly. And I remember you saying that to me, because we were trying to work out... Basically, it was the last minute, and the writers slammed those two scenes together. And you know, you can't blame anyone, because we didn't have time to you know, figure out the most elegant way to present this information. And what it ends up being is a lot of exposition that I have to get out about the Dutch. So We rarely ever rehearse as much as we rehearsed this scene. We went over it and over it and over it and over it while they were lighting it, so that me and Sarah could get into this rhythm. And she needed to have the ability to be like, you know, if you watch her reaction, she's just like shocked, and then it's like, wow, this is hilarious. Wow, this is as important as what we were just talking about.
It just gets deeper and deeper and deeper.
Where Aiden is coming from is, if you don't listen to me right now, we all might die.
Right.
And Mark helped me because he gave me some of his dialogue. Mark's like, you know, this should be your fight. You should be the one who's trying to get through to her. And so basically, yeah. So
well, what did
the
you
whole
get,
scene
did
eventually
you give him
worked.
Something in return?
I don't want to talk about what I gave him.
Can't talk about it. Can't talk about
it. I knew it.
And then, of course, your reaction. Oh, well, all right.
Yeah.
Mark always bringing unexpected humor to the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the scene worked out eventually very well, but it took a lot of work to get there because as it was written, there was no acknowledgement that it was a weird gear shift to talk about the death of this kid and to be in the depths of despair and then immediately go, and the Dutch, let me tell you all about the Dutch now. And they're like this and they're important. And then Mark goes, yes, and they're like from Amish country. And I'm like, yes, that's right, Mark. And, you know, it's
interesting.
Like, so we had to turn it into this whole, no, let's make this a scene about she is still in the place with Bernie. And I'm like, okay, but you got to snap out of that right now because we're in trouble. We're in big trouble.
Right, right. It's a shame that sometimes exposition has to slip
so,
out.
But you have to do it.
Yeah. And the way it finally ended up, I think it kept the urgency and intensity of the scene without, and still got the information out.
And there's an old adage in film and in TV writing that if you need to get exposition out, which oftentimes, you know, this exposition is just a part of life.
Right.
We don't have time to give you three episodes giving you the background of the Dutch. We actually just need you to know who that is and move on.
Right, and know that they're scary.
And so to have a character in the scene who doesn't know who that is, that's useful, right? So there's actually, you know, the worst thing in exposition is for me and Sam to be sitting on a couch in a movie, right? We're in a movie together. And I go, Sam, you've been my best friend for 7 years.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And you've been dating the same girl.
I know you've been going through a rough time right now.
You know, saying things that you would never say to someone.
Right.
We've been best friends for 7 years. Well, he knows that. You know, but there are clever things you can do. And one of the things that people do is they give exposition in the middle of the proverbial car chase.
Yeah.
That if you're saying a bunch of information in the middle of a car chase, and it's information someone needs to get out, which, by the way, they do this in Terminator to great effect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The cyborgs are out there! Yeah. Skin, blood, skin, sweat, growing for the cyborg! You know, and he's just going off and telling Sarah while he's driving this car, and it's this exciting scene, but he's giving a lot of exposition. So
that was a pretty good, what's his name, too?
Sarah!
Yeah, that was pretty good.
What's Terminator? Michael Biehn.
Michael Biehn, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Cyborgs don't feel pain. Yeah. I do. Don't do that again. There's, by the way, a story about my Michael Biehn impression that maybe we'll get to at some point. But long story short, a friend of me I actually directed me into doing a really good Michael Biehn impression and then forced me to call up his ex-girlfriend. And she bought it, and it was bad. It got really bad. She thought it was going to be this funny thing. And it didn't go over
That's
well.
That's terrible.
Yeah, well, I'm looking on the phone with this woman going, this is not actually funny.
That's terrible.
This is not funny.
Yeah, no.
Now that ex-girlfriend is married to Michael Biehn, and now she thinks it's hilarious.
But at the time,
it was horrifying.
Michael Biehn and his wives.
Yeah.
But, by the way, shucking that corn was kind of a nightmare.
I bet.
Yeah, because we had limited corn.
Oh, no.
Because of the time of year it was.
Oh.
Limited corn. And so they were like, all right, it's really important. The continuity is really important.
Oh my God.
So you have to make sure that you're shucking at the exact same time. That was another one of those things, that wind blowing the corn husks there was like this big complicated thing. They weren't sure how it was going to happen. And then it ended up just being Vidar just holding a flag, just waving it as fast as he could.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. That was pretty good.
I think we had learned from the candle.
Yeah, dude.
Ordeal, yeah, putting out the candles.
Just do it practically.
Mark, I love you in these scenes.
I love you in life.
As a friend, I love you in these scenes.
Well, that's what you were telling me then. You told me it was more than...
You misunderstood.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I love this whole storyline for Bishop.
It's great.
It further
humanizes...
Well, Aiden doesn't have to be the only lady killer.
Hey!
What up?
Hello!
The poster for next season.
Yes.
it's just...
But it really is a very sweet scene, and yeah, there's it's great to give this character a completely vulnerable human side.
Yep, and it also I'm not going to hopefully give anything away by saying this, but the turn at the end is very important for the Bishop character.
And
if you ask me,
extremely well played.
Yeah,
by the way.
God,
so
and there were
well
yeah,
played.
I remember there, that was a point of kind of not contention, but
well, yeah, we were, you know,
it was odd because it was like
the writers always do. I've never read a script for this show that I didn't like, and they crank out so many great ideas. Having said that, we also have our concerns here and there, and
right.
And sometimes they will very, you know, generously adjust, and sometimes they don't, and it turns out they didn't need to adjust because Mark hit what they wrote out of the park.
Yeah, and it was the way they had intended. Very smart.
Although they did adjust some stuff because we had some questions about it for clarity, and then they adjusted it, and then Mark hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
Boy, I loved playing this version of Aiden. I really did. Because Aiden is so kind of sullen and, you know, kind of quiet and to himself. And to play a more gregarious version of the character was, you know, was really a treat. Not to mention that I, you know, I dug the costumes and everything. I thought it was fun.
I liked playing this version of Bishop. Bishop was kind of childlike and innocent in a way, and back in touch with something that he had lost. That he had lost for, you know, a long, long time.
Yeah. You imagine if you were alive for that long, you go through a lot of different stages, a lot of phases. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Almost, you're almost a different person in every lifetime.
Absolutely. And you know, these flashbacks end up being almost a linear story. Because where this goes for the 70s, this leads directly into the 70s flashback, which leads directly into what was happening modern day in later episodes. We shall not spoil that.
Biting your nails.
Yeah.
Such a great choice.
Oh, and I dude, his ringtone?
Yeah, it's really
good. Oh, it's hilarious. I can't remember what it was.
It's just
some
silly horrible rap song.
Yeah.
Which, and he can't get out of his pocket, and it just
He wakes the Dutch up.
So hilarious that Marcus has that ringtone.
I know.
Now we have the wonderful, inestimable. Is that right? This
right? Yeah, I mean, I think that's right.
It's a good, nice word,
Terry Kinney. Yeah, he's this is one of the founding members of Steppenwolf right here. Chicago guy.
He's no shit, this guy.
He's no shit.
He's also like one of the sweetest people ever. He came up to me, and I think he did it to all of us, but he came up to me on the first day of his shooting, and you know, when he was up for the job, they showed him the first two episodes that we had shot.
Yes.
In the state that they were in.
So that he could hit the ground running.
Yeah, so they also, like, in making the decision, you know, to do the show, it's like, yeah, see, what we're doing is pretty awesome and, like, quality. Anyway, he not to, you know, pat ourselves on the back, but
that's what they said to him. They said, look, what we're doing is pretty awesome.
Right, pretty awesome. But, you know, I always look at my, I always think of myself not in the highest regard, and I'm kind of a schmo, and he came up to me and... He was like, you know, I just want to tell you, like, it's an honor to meet you. Like, I think what you're doing on the show is so great, and I'm so happy to be here working with you. And it was like, dude, can I kiss your feet? Like, you don't need to say this to me.
I remember one of the first things he asked me is, he's like, what's going on with you and that girl that plays your girlfriend?
She's hilarious.
She's quite good, by the way. And, you know, and I just laughed. But, you know, he was extremely... He did the same thing to me. He came up and just... He was like...
And Megan, too. Megan, too.
I like the show. I like what you guys are doing. Yeah. And by the way, I think for an actor of his caliber... First of all, it's a tremendous compliment that he does that. But secondly, I am so grateful that, A, they thought to try to get him.
Yeah.
And, B, that when they got him here, they did what you should do. Which is...
Right.
Here are the episodes, and hey, let's go out to dinner, let's talk about the character, let's talk about the show. And so he knew, he was on board when he got here. It wasn't like he had to ask us a lot of questions. He knew the tone of the show.
Yeah.
He knew what it is that he was meant to be doing, and he was very confident walking on, which is the way that, unfortunately, you don't have time to do with every actor that comes on a show, mm-hmm. or that is a show, but with an actor like him, for a role that is that important,
right?
I'm glad that they did that. You know, if you really got to treat the guy right. By the way, this guy is amazing.
Yeah, Vlasta Brana. He was he's like an old school Montreal guy. He is
amazing,
such a talented, and what a sweetheart of a man.
And an incredible voice.
Yeah, incredible voice, incredible actor, and
so
such
good.
A pro. And
so
the stories that he had were just incredible. And I love this episode for Josh. Like I really love how this progresses the character and kind of where he lands at the end of it. You know, it's just really interesting. I don't know. So to me, it was a really fun thing to play. It was an interesting storyline.
Here's where we really get to meet the creepy Amish.
Mm.
And yeah. This is, I think, where old Amish Abe got...
Old?
this is where old Amish Abe had his birth.
Oh, my
this
God.
Very scene.
So basically, I think... Terry learned very, very quickly. He fit right in with our cast, right?
Yeah.
Because we're a bunch of goofballs. By the way, that picture, there was a picture of the guy who's right there. The picture in the back of a funeral.
Is that
that's Adam Kane. Right? That's a picture of Adam.
Oh,
so apparently
amazing.
Adam's funeral is happening back there.
That's right.
I just love that.
That's so funny.
So okay, while we were shooting this scene, you know, we just get punchy when we shoot this stuff. It's part exhaustion, but it's mostly the fact that we're just a bunch of goofballs.
Yeah, punchy.
And so I don't know how it started happening, but basically me and Mark and Terry start going, "Now let me tell you the story of old Amish Abe. Now, you thought you misheard me. That's right. I said Amish Abe. It's a misnomer that Abe Lincoln was actually an honest man. Honest Abe. They misheard. It was actually Amish Abe. He was Amish. But he was a bastard just like everyone. And he killed his share of whores, let me tell you."
Oh!
So it was, yeah, you know, we were...
In the Pepperidge Farm, boy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we do it in the Pepperidge Farm. Amish Abe.
You think you're going to be told a story about apple picking?
Yes. We started telling all these stories about all these horrible things that Abe Lincoln did that no one knows about. Right?
Yeah. I love that beat for you, by the way. Where you recognize the situation, what's happening, and then you have to put it in check immediately.
By the way,
really, really great.
Compliments to Terry again for making this scene so damned
creepy,
uncomfortable.
I know. I remember it was like...
And, oh, by the way, Adrian's great too. He's
amazing.
Creepy as hell. He is actually really terrifying as this character.
Yep.
Yeah, he is creepy.
Yeah. He's a very, 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 and also, like, it's so funny how, like, you really realize, like, the worth of an actor when they're so, so different than what their characters actually are.
Yeah, because
he's really a gregarious guy.
Yeah,
he's totally down-to-earth, chill, relaxed guy, whom, again, you see him in his civvies, his civilian clothes, and he's just like, "Hey, dude, what's up?" But then you put him in this, and he's really terrifying.
Yeah, she's...
This!
I know.
I love that Terry came up with this, and you must have loved it.
Oh, dude, it was literally so not.
Awesome.
It was
so
bizarre. It like was the creepiest feeling thing.
Oh, here's another thing. We had dialogue here that simply could not be said in front of the Dutch, and they say it under their breath. So it's like, yes, but vampires have awesome hearing. We can hear heartbeats.
Right.
So we had to adjust the dialogue and just assume that we could say something that they wouldn't mind hearing.
They wouldn't understand.
They wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
Right. It was panicking here.
It was vague enough.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're back in the 50s, and I've been AWOL with my girl.
Yep.
All night.
And I'm your backup, even though I'm not happy about it.
You are my backup.
Yep.
I love the idea that they don't change. You know what I mean? That the Amish are literally identical to what they are. In the
This is where we get to see exactly how frightening they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Adrian, too, that look.
Oh, and... Yeah. I had a proud moment the other night where I discussed this episode with my buddy Frank Darabont, who has been enjoying this show along with the rest of the audience.
Oof.
And he mentioned how creepy Terry was in this. And,
yeah.
And,
He's creepy because he's edgeless in a
yes,
way.
Yes! Yes! Because you expect Yes.
You expect the mafioso boss, you, since we're kind of operating on the principle of the mafia family, you expect that, and what you get is something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of a religious orthodox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a relaxation.
A relaxation.
Yeah.
Calm.
If he had a heartbeat, it would never elevate, kind of.
Yes.
Thing.
Yeah, yes.
It really is.
And I'll tell you something, and what's wonderful about him is, okay, so me and
Hannibal Lecter-esque.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know?
Me and Mark discuss sometimes, or at least we wonder about, how do you play someone, in my case, who's 250 years old, Mark's case, 350, how old is Bishop?
Yeah.
Yeah, a good 100 years older than Aiden. Now, Terry Kinney has to play a guy who's like
1,000
years old.
Yeah. 1,010, isn't that what you say?
And I,
yes.
And here's the thing, I buy it. And it should be noted that all of the actors who play the Dutch are bringing something interesting, even if they don't have a lot of dialogue. Boy, they are disconcerting presences to have around. You know, I really thought every one of them, even if they had a line or two, really added something to the show. And that's not, by the way, that's very difficult to have. Very few lines and to make an impression, because the assumption on a set, if you have like two or three lines, is that, okay, come on, you have two or three lines, get it right.
Right.
But the thing is, because you have two or three lines, you don't have anything to build off of or anything to inform you how those lines are meant to be said.
Right.
So for an actor to get it right is always...
And not only that, you're coming into a set that's been
established,
operating for quite a number of episodes already.
Exactly.
It's
when
kind
I started,
of intimidating.
When I started my career doing one or two line roles, those were actually very difficult to do.
And also feel... Yeah, and you know, feel like you're part of the team.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But yeah, there's a funny thing. Now you won't notice it because it's over. But
I'm sorry.
No. It's not important at all. But there's a funny continuity inconsistency
with the lock
in that scene. No, with my clothing. So roll it back, all those watching. It's a pretty funny one.
I
almost feel like I should just let them discover it. I can tell you guys, but and also, like, if you watch it back, you're like, oh my god, it's so blatant.
Wow.
Yeah, really, really wildly blatant.
Who's to blame?
Yeah, so,
who's to blame?
Throw
him to the wolves.
I know. I'm not.
There's a bus.
There's no blame. I'm not going to blame anyone.
That surprises me that there is a wardrobe continuity issue, because they were so
very
on
point. Very on point. And like with the time on your watch to how rolled up my sleeves are always rolled up. Whenever I wear a button down, I always roll up my sleeves. So it's like how rolled up my sleeves are. It's always very, very consistent. But also, I want to comment on the set dressing of this particular set. I think it's just spectacular, because that was
literally
a freaking cave. That
yeah,
place,
it's a furnace
really. Yeah, it literally is like nothing, and they made it so rich and so lived in. So yeah,
like,
yeah,
the lock is on.
Oh yeah, look at that! Look at that!
Get out!
Josh would notice.
By the way, as we've watched these episodes, we've discovered that our show is rife with continuity and visual errors all over the place. And you know what? It's charm!
Yeah, well,
it's charm, guys!
You know, when you're doing two episodes simultaneously and we're 17, 18, 19 hours a day...
Seriously?
Slips are inevitable.
And I'm sorry, but like...
I've never been this exhausted on any shoot. And again, I can watch an episode and tell you how exhausted I was just by glancing at me. And then I can tell you exactly what was happening in terms of how much sleep I was getting. I mean, there were...
I think I almost died.
Dude.
I think I almost died during episode 12. I got so sick that I thought I was going to die.
That was really bad.
On set, I was like, I'm like,
this is it for me.
I need to go to the hospital.
Yeah, tell my wife that I love her.
Literally.
This was
when you're trying to find the key to get into the funeral.
I love this scene. I love this
parlor
scene.
To spring old
Josh Pence. Yeah.
This notebook. Yep.
Was an incredible thing, because it was, I think you mentioned it actually, like when we in episode 7 when you see my notebook.
Your notebook, but this
but
really
this notebook was one of the most tremendous pieces of art department genius that I've ever seen. And I mean, it was all handwritten and all hand drawn and all the most beautiful, detailed, well thought out, well imagined stuff, illustrations and description, and you know, it was marvelous.
No, I know.
So and literally, like,
you could actually learn a hell of a lot about werewolves if you read.
Yeah, literally, like where, like you were saying, like in during when we were commenting on episode 7, but it's like where the teeth go when the werewolf isn't a werewolf.
And the hair follicles.
The hair follicles, like different cross sections of flesh that you can kind of see.
Moon diagrams.
I almost like wish on the DVD that they could scan every page of that book and like put it as like a special thing. Because,
because
it was really
put it in a box set.
Josh's notebook, be able to compare Josh's notes with the professor's notes.
Incredible.
Be pretty incredible. Cool.
Which, by the way, the professor's notes get absorbed into Josh's notes.
Exactly. Right. Well,
later on.
Yeah, later on. Yeah.
By the way, I generally. Mark and I talked about this, you know, we were talking about the dressing, and when you picture these things, when you picture the cage, you picture giant bars, and you're like, no, this is the way the cage would look. These are the materials they'd have on hand for constructing
this cage.
Just
make it effective.
And later on, when we actually get to the place where all the vampires have gathered to watch the werewolf fight, that was another thing where, in the script, I see it as sort of almost like a pit with a Roman Colosseum and
amphitheater-esque.
Yeah.
And when you get there, it's more like Fight Club, and me and Mark were like, yeah, and it should be.
Yeah, it's
it really
so
should
cool.
be because
it's
these are
so
people.
Awesome.
After all, these are
right.
You know, we're not
right.
You know, this is not
a
like high
fight.
Fantasy.
Yeah.
This is right, exactly.
We're not Michael Vick.
This is the height of desperation to go to your girlfriend whom you've killed her son and say, hey, listen,
I need you.
So, could you help me out?
And not only that, help me out with somebody I think is totally despicable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, and here's... Could you kiss on Marcus for me, would you? By the way, I read online, apparently some people thought it was very funny that she goes, bend the bars, and I go, I don't know, I'm not Superman.
Yeah.
Because in my previous gig, I fought him a lot.
Yeah.
So...
Superman.
Now, was that
Gregory
irony intentional in the script?
I wasn't even aware of it. I just saw the line, and I completely forgot that it had anything to do with...
That is pretty funny, though.
And again, here's another thing about how much Rebecca knows about the world around her. And in that month that Bishop had with her before Aiden comes back into the picture, you educated her on a lot of stuff. You probably killed dozens of people. Mm-hmm. You taught her about werewolves and ghosts, because she's a, you know, when she sees Sally, it's not like, what is going on? She's like, oh, it's a freaking ghost.
Well, she says, what is that, right? What is that, yeah.
Yeah.
So
but she recognizes right away what...
Well, it's...
She tells her, don't you have a light to walk to?
Yeah,
or eyes,
right.
Something
right.
to do?
Exactly. And this is... And again, this theme, it's Sally, who cannot affect anything, essentially, becomes...
You're more empowered.
Yeah.
Exactly.
More
becomes
empowered.
A linchpin of this of these three
Participates.
People. And it becomes important that she's part of this group.
Definitely.
And as the season goes on, that, especially in episode 13, we see that she is absolutely a key player.
Necessary part of the...
Exactly. And really, I think, you know, one of the great things about this whole season is... Are these three people going to continue to deal with their problems alone, or are they actually going to work together?
Right.
You know,
right.
like friends.
And trust each other. And,
yeah,
right,
like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like you would with friends. You're going to open up and help. Let friends help you out. And that ain't Aiden's MO. And Josh wants to disassociate from his condition, so, and therefore, kind of in a weird way, his roommates at times. And Sally is just isolated. Sally's underestimated throughout the entire...
Fast forwarding to the end of episode 13.
Which, can we?
No, I'm not going to say anything.
Oh, okay.
But it is... I'm so excited to see where we go. So excited to see what happens.
Yeah.
It's really thrilling. I love this pants hiked up, white t-shirt tucked in. That look. You look like Cagney, you know? You're like...
Huh. Yeah, I think that's what they were.
I think that was what they were going
for.
Yeah.
I really did like this scene. This was because Aiden feels horribly betrayed by Bishop. Like, look, man, you're the only game in town for me, and all you're doing is messing up.
And this introduces a piece of our vampire world too that I think is different from other vampire worlds, and that's the hold that the Maker has over his vampire.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what explain that? Like, what is the hold? What is that?
Well, the way the scene was written before was I had to release you. Literally.
Yes. Right. There was actually this thing where we looked into each other's eyes and there was like some sort of weird magic thing that happened. I think it's better this way. Because, again, our show is not
so basically
about supernatural stuff.
But I also think that, you know, with our relationship, it's not about master and slave. We were co-equals,
right?
And we were partners.
We worked together.
And worked together.
And
so.
this moment, they will kill you, shows that Aiden is like, man, I'm worried about you too.
Yeah.
You're screwing me over, but God.
Yeah,
like,
do you want
going
this?
To
well, you guys are friends.
Absolutely.
I mean, best friends, you know?
I don't want to sound weird about this, but.
Do it.
I mean, our story is the love story.
It really is.
It is.
It really, really is, yeah.
You know? It's a love story.
Yep. Yep.
And here's Aiden once again sticking it to old.
However, okay, but did you? Let me ask you this: when you watch this, can you see that this is also killing Aiden as well? Like a little bit, he's trying to cover it up.
I don't see that at all. No,
yeah.
He doesn't
care.
If Sam Witwer as an actor make a choice, generally speaking,
I don't see it.
I either see it because it's so blatant. You know,
or
like,
you
nah,
don't
choice,
see
or you
it
don't
at
see
all.
It because it's too vague.
Because I'll either throw it in your face
exactly.
And be way too big.
And it's like off-putting.
It's off-putting and really terrible acting.
Yeah,
or I'm going to be so subtle as to have nothing going on.
It's literally dead eyes.
I will come to you and say, Sam, I am playing nothing.
Also, just horrible.
Here's the Fight Club pit.
Yeah, this is really, really cool. I love the atmosphere.
And all of this shot on the same location.
I mean, yeah,
you
know, I know.
We talked about that before. I mean, these locations that we've been at have been at the same place.
You know,
this crazy monastery.
By the way, look at these people they cast as the vampires. I love it. I love it. I love that they're regular people. We don't see people in long black trench coats.
Yeah.
That, you know, some of them look like, you know, school teachers or parents or, you know, whoever. There weren't, like, they didn't, like, pass out high cheekbones or anything. Everyone was basically a person, and I loved that.
Yeah, I think that's really cool.
This is the result of Bishop's hard work.
Right,
years,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Accumulating a little army of...
The right people.
Folks. Yeah.
Important
right
people.
People.
Yep. Yeah, but that's actually a really good point, Mark. And also, it's like these are all practical sets. Like that obviously, with the exception of the bars themselves, all these, you know, cement columns and you know the room itself and the fluorescent lighting, all that stuff is real. You know, these crazy different rooms and this, you know, that tunnel behind Marcus there is real. You know, all this stuff is real, and that's so rare, you know. It's oftentimes they have to build it because they can't find it, and this place kind of served as like our home base of creepiness.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, it's so funny when we were shooting this. So I come up and I'm looking at Vlasa here, right? Looking at him, and then Marcus stands in front of me,
mm-hmm.
and although it looks like I can see him right now. Can't see him.
Marcus?
No, Vlasta. So there, I'm just looking at like... Yeah,
Marcus'
yeah.
shoulders.
Yeah, and so that's just kind of one of those weird little things.
Where you have to look at it.
Well, you know what sucks is when you actually have to play a scene like that.
Oh, yeah.
The person
terrible.
There was a scene you had to play with me, and we did not have time to place everything correctly, so you actually had to play to like my shoulder.
Yeah.
On a key scene.
I remember. That was when Carol was dying.
When Carol was dying. I got to look at you and play against you. You didn't get to play against me. I was there, but...
I think I had to do that in the scene where I introduced you to the Blood Den and try to...
Yeah, I did the same thing.
I had to look at your ear.
Yeah, it was the sight lines were all messed up, but boy, that scene turned out good. I really like that scene.
This was an embarrassing moment for me. I mean, this was... Actually, you know what? So this was a moment where I kind of gave up, and I was kind of like, I'm not going to be ashamed anymore of being naked. I refuse to feel uncomfortable in this moment.
How naked were you?
I was in a little, like a dance belt. Like a little,
dance
like
belt.
A, yeah, like a little flesh-colored
like
dance
belt. Like what I'm wearing right now?
Like
this? Like
exactly what you're wearing, only
color,
without the thong. But it really, mine were full ass. But it really was like, you just, it's still like, you're strapped to a chair, you feel really, you're just so exposed, and it's so You know, it really does.
And there's all these people everywhere.
Yeah, and strangers. And they were all really cool, actually. All the extras were really, really cool on this day. This next shot, this next one is so effective. Right there, when my face starts to change and crack. Oof.
Yeah, they discovered also, not to give away too much of the magic, but they discovered at this point in the process that for some of the stages in the werewolf makeup, they didn't need to have Sam in it.
Right, yeah.
That was a very valuable discovery.
Oh my god, this day, I was so happy on this
like
day.
Like, these things, do we need to have Sam in that?
Well, it was, the other problem was, they did
right
not...
Right there.
Yeah, right.
Do we need to have Sam...
They didn't have time to... God, this is so creepy and effective, too. I love this. But they didn't have time to put me in three different applications on this day.
Exactly.
So they were like, let's get him the most human-like we can... Oh, God, that's so cool.
That's really cool.
And that the wolf actually...
I love the way the wolf
crazy. It's so devastating.
But yeah, they were like... they didn't have time to put Sammy through two... You know, if you've heard previous commentaries, there's like a day where Sammy did like a 20-hour day and a 4-hour sleep and then like a 19-hour day, right?
Stupid.
They didn't have time to do that again to him.
No.
So they actually got two other guys to be in the things that you would never recognize Sammy in anyway, and it's kind of like, oh, we should have maybe been doing this.
That's so cool. Yeah, and they figured it out, which is actually, you know, bodes well for next season. You know, hopefully we've ironed out a lot of these kind of kinks that we had. I love Vlasta's wolf. You know, he's kind of like gray and weathered and, you know, looks kind of beat up.
This is one of those moments for us as actors where we're looking at a green screen with a couple of X's or dots where the fight's taking place, somebody moving a little laser around and saying, here's where the fight is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
now, here's something interesting. I think that this transition works probably better with commercial breaks.
Yeah, right.
Now, I watch everything on DVD, so I don't do that. Or DVR, even fast forward.
Right, right, right.
But I think for someone who isn't watching a commercial break and thinking about what they just saw,
and
then you come back to Josh and he's alive.
And he's in the bedroom.
And he's
not only is he alive, but he's completely out of the setting that he was in.
You know, you almost need to have a passage of time
between
those two scenes to wrap your brain around that change. And I think, you know, as I've seen this without commercial breaks and with commercial breaks, this moment actually works better with commercial breaks.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I remember whatever was going on with this, I remember just being exhausted when we shot this.
Well, I remember we were all relieved because, with the exception of that shot that you just saw,
there was no relief in
which is over your shoulder, right? Over your shoulder onto me. You'll notice it's all in the same direction. We're lined up so that he can cover this scene all in the same direction. With the exception of that shot, that setup, it's all in the same direction. So we were actually able to shoot this scene pretty quick, and yes, we were exhausted when we shot this.
Like, always exhausted. Trying to figure out because there was inevitably we would always run out of time, so we had to figure out where we could cut corners. And the thing is, and
still be effective,
and
though,
still be effective,
and not
cut
sacrifice.
Corners in a way where you just go, you know what, we don't need to shoot this scene in five different directions,
right?
You know, and I think this scene is everything it needs to be, shot in this one direction,
right. It really is. That shot right there. It's just like, it's like a three shot, but it's like all stacky. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. Yeah. And I
remember they play with focus, you know, now it's like you throw focus to all of us when it's
And Aiden here is considering the fact that he's now gotta go and be a vampire again, which is horrifying to him.
And abandon his friends.
Yeah. And really not associate with you guys.
Right,
He cannot and should not associate with you two.
Oh god, this is the best. This scene.
Mark, so now I know that you had concerns about this, and I know we all did, because the adjustments that we wanted to have them make, they didn't make them in the way that we were hoping.
Mm-hmm.
And they essentially gave you exposition, things to explain as to, you know, and again, I'll tell you,
bravo.
It works just fine. I think it's really effective. It's really like, you know, so...
You know what it is? You were talking about how Bishop is kind of childlike in this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is his
Lost
moment
innocence.
To lose that You know what I mean? To transition back to being an animal.
I'll tell you something. Every time that we put a pin in one of these locations, time-wise, in terms of where these characters are, I want to see Bishop before this. Mm. I want to see a lot more of our characters dealing with each other over the hundreds of years. But Mark, talk about the scene, man.
Wow, I mean, like you said, we had issues with the nature of the scene for a while, and it started a creative dialogue that went back and forth for how many days? I mean, four or five days a week. Because it was hard for me to wrap my mind around killing her.
Mm. Yes.
I felt it would
why not just compel her and send her away?
Compel her, break up with her,
yeah.
Leave, you know. She seems to be heading in that direction anyway. Right. She's been with me long enough and known my nature. Why do I have to kill her?
Yeah, and I even suggested that the Dutch should instead say, give up the girl. They should say, give us the girl, and we'll give you Boston. Thus, you kill her as mercy, because you're like, I can't turn you over to the Dutch.
Which was morally acceptable to me, because like we've talked about earlier, I like playing bad guys with a moral point of view that anybody could relate to. But I think their justification was that... and he might even be able to say it better than me, but it seemed that their justification was that there's kind of an emotional barrier that I have to overcome in order to be considered as the actual leader of this vampire world in Boston.
And also to get back in my good graces, to get back in Aiden's good graces.
There's a certain kind of brutality and coldness to humankind that I have to demonstrate here. So it's kind of an act of self-preservation, even though I'm acting for, you know, some power in the end, you know, to be a powerful person in the end. I'm redeeming myself in the eyes of my vampire brethren by killing her and showing that I am still the predator at heart. I haven't lost anything.
Which I just think he pulled off beautifully.
And it makes sense. It makes total sense too. You know.
I know they recorded some.
Yeah, the dialogue. You said, what did you say to them?
I was just trying to explain to them what this car was, and some of the other Dutch back there were asking crazy questions that were just funny, like, where's the horse blood?
Oh,
where do the hooves go? Does it have reins? And I'd have to try to explain to them the mechanics of this car that they just couldn't figure out.
I saw a cut where you're like, and this mirror basically goes like this and you deal with it.
And you realize how you step on the gas and that propels it. And we just had this whole funny kind of discussion. Yeah. Even though this entire scene almost is looped.
Yes, it is.
Oh, because we are
both looped. By the way, we discovered very quickly that... Because Paolo, the director, he would say one of two things. He'd say action, but he liked how the German filmmakers would say, please.
Yes.
They'd say please, and that was their way of saying action. He says that he thought it was a more polite way of telling the actors to do their job. Well, every time they yelled action on the street... Every person in the background, these are all real people, by the way. Our camera is across the street, generally. And sometimes they were near us, but we were kind of inconspicuous. When they would yell action, everyone would stop and turn around and say, oh, what's going on? Are they shooting something here? What's going on?
Hilarious.
So
that shot is so great.
So
your faces.
I remember saying to Paolo, I'm like, you know, listen, Paolo, you need to say please. And the moment he started saying, I'm like, we're going to get better... extra acting from the people who are not extras,
right?
If we say please, and eventually started doing that, and then honestly, then we started shooting, and no one paid us any
meat. No, that's great. Smart, you're a smart man. Is that what you're trying to say? Were you trying to elicit you're smart from me?
Smart,
you were, weren't you?
Well, really.
But by the way, bravo to you two, because I think that that just the whole arc of your characters in that episode is just brilliant. So,
all right, well, we'll see you in the next episode.
Later.